Mary, you lived in town.
Yes.
And you were born?
They went to the hospital in Martindale.
But you were, and your dad did?
My dad was line foreman for the Kansas Power Line.
Okay, what can you tell us about Kansas Power and Light?
Well, I thought that their trucks were always just looked huge to me. But they couldn't have been very big because you know where Leanne and Stephen's shop is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the little brick building just down from that. That was where they kept their trucks, and they get two trucks in there. And so they really weren't very big. The guys had to ride on the back. There was a bench on the back of the truck. And Daddy was so proud when they ordered one, and he somehow made recommendations that they kind of make a little box thing, and then they covered it in the wintertime with a big heavy tarp because it was so cold back there, and they take turns getting up in front to warm up.
What territory was KPNL, or was it just Kansas City limits, or?
Well, I don't know. They did a lot around Larned and Pawnee Rock and down south, you know, around Roselle and Burdette and in through there. When the big blizzard in 57, was it 57 or 56? 56.
Six or seven.
I wasn't here. No. But when that thing hit, they called and told Daddy that they needed to get the line gang together. And we didn't see him for about 10 days. And when we did, he came home and got clean underwear and clean socks and put an extra pair of socks in his pocket. And he said, well, when he walked out that night, he told Mom, he said, don't expect to hear from me, you know, until you see me.
Now, tell us about this blizzard. You lived through it, I guess, here.
Well, it wasn't a big deal to me because I lived in town and we had power all along. It was people out in the country that really suffered. There were a lot of people that got lost in the snow and their cars covered up, stalled, and there were a lot of deaths from that one.
How much snow was there?
Oh gosh, I don't know. It was just, you know, drifted to where it would just cover the fence post. It was so tall. And
the people in the country didn't have electricity for months.
Yeah, that's right. But they weren't with KPNL.
Oh, okay.
There was, for some reason, I don't know, it was kind of a political thing.
Well, there were different co-ops or whatever.
Well, KPNL would come out just to certain places. Now, along the road there at St. Peter and Paul, up to the church, wasn't there, or was there?
Yeah, that was about, that was in the early 30s. KPNL went down the road out here. They went to the city limits or something like that. And then, if you had $500, you could hook on going on out. Well, just a handful of them had $500 there at that time. And I got into it with old Gordon Coates. I said, you guys really screwed things up. Boy, he's turned to
me. Yeah, well, my dad was that way about it, too. He thought.
I said, you guys had the chance. The government had to come in and give the farmers electricity because you would not hook us on. And if we didn't have enough money to hook on, I can't feel sorry for them. I told myself, well, I care less if they go broke.
I don't think they really cared. I think they thought they had all they could handle at the time, but it probably was a mistake on their part.
Well, they do just like they do now. They build another plant.
Yeah. Well, Daddy started out in the Depression. He didn't finish high school. And he got a job with whatever electric it was at that time. It wasn't Kansas Power Light.
Well, the system right down here, it was privately owned.
Well, whatever. Anyway, he climbed poles, and he told about one time there was a blizzard, and he stopped with, I can't think of their names, they were big people over, cattle people over this side of Larned, and horse people. Anyway, he borrowed a horse, and he rode the line to, you know, find out when, what was down and where and how bad it was. But
he telephoned back.
No, he had to ride back. he said that was probably the coldest ride he ever had on horse.
Well, now, did you have brothers and sisters?
I have one brother, Tom. He lives in Garden City. Mm-hmm. He's 2 years older than I am. And
he's getting pretty old then.
Yeah. Mom called us the Cats and Jammer kids. That's a cartoon. Mm-hmm. And because what one didn't think of, the other did. We were pretty hungry.
And you attended St. Nicholas?
Oh, no, I wasn't a Catholic.
Oh, you weren't Catholic at this time. Oh, no wonder Daddy. See, I heard that Daddy was...
No, I know more about prejudice than Dad. He was isolated, mm-hmm. you know. But,
well, I didn't frankly give a darn.
So what church did you attend?
Episcopal.
The Episcopal Church.
Always called her mom just a half-baked Catholic.
That kind of get mother and dizzy.
I'm sure it did.
So you went to the public school then?
Yes, I went to Southside and started kindergarten there and went clear through the sixth grade there. And we had a tumbling team in the fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. Mrs. Husted had been a PE major. She had a double major, that in English. And so she really liked it. And Gail Graff had had a lot of tumbling. And they got us started with a tumbling team. And we went around to some PTA meetings and things like that and performed. Thought we were really hot stuff.
Now you go cloak.
Yeah, now I can't.
Did you have a costume uniform or?
I don't remember if we wore red shorts. Southside was called the Kinsley Bulldogs because they always played Lincoln and back and forth. And we all had Bulldog t-shirts. I know that. Maxine Drott's School of Dance was real popular at that time. Oh. And some of us had danced, and my expertise was acrobats, and so the tumbling team just was.
No, by dance easy. You mean tap dancing, ballet.
There was tap, ballet, toe dancing, and acrobats. And I did a little tap. I wasn't very good at it, but what they always had me do was the acrobats. And so I really enjoyed the tumbling team. And
how big was your class about?
We graduated with 41 or two. And when we got out of sixth grade, then we went to high school, to junior high. Uh-huh. And then the Lincoln kids came and...
Was the junior high in the high school?
Mm-hmm. There were three rooms set aside for the junior high. And...
Were you in sports or cheerleaders or anything?
Cheerleading was not my bag.
Afraid you'd lose?
I thought they were. I sort of twirled. I was a twirler for a
while.
So
were you in the band then too, or just a twirler?
Well, I had to be in the band to twirl, and so they put me in the drum section. And I just kind of drummed, but when we went to contest, Mr. Radke, I said, what am I supposed to do? You know? And he said, just pretend, just don't hit the head, just, you know.
What was the how big was the band? And
oh, it was good sized.
I wonder how many was in.
Well, I know there was, it was a bass drummer, and I think there were like probably five in the drum section, so you know it was.
You played at football games and marched and parades?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I didn't play at football games or anything, but I always performed. I marched with them and, you know, went out there and twirled a little bit at halftime. That was really more of a social thing for me. We went to the fair. We always went to the fair, took the band to the fair. And
the state fair?
Yes. And that's when the big petticoats and crinolines, you know, and everything. And we came up with the idea that our short twirling skirts would be much more attractive with red crinolines. And our mothers made us little short petticoats, and our little short skirts stood out. And we were top of the fair. Everybody would say, oh, there's the band that has the twirlers with the petticoats. The next year there were lots of petticoats under the twirlers.
You were a style
setter. Yeah. Was Dawson here then?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm surprised he allowed that.
Well, I don't know. We made quite a stir, and of course we really shook it and thought it was we were great. And let's see. I didn't get serious about school until my senior year, and then I went away to college and found out that I should have gotten serious much sooner. I wouldn't have had to study.
Now, why did you go to college if you, you know, hadn't?
Well, the girls in my mother's family, it wasn't a very big, I didn't have very many cousins, but the girls all became nurses, and mother thought that's what I should be. And at different times, you know, as I was growing up, I thought it'd be cool. Well, the beginning of our senior year, one of my best friends was in an accident with her sister and her mother and dad, and her folks were killed. And so I went to Hutchinson to sit with her in the hospital a couple times, and she was really hurt badly. And I was one of them that went in and helped clean up their apartment. And after they were killed, and I had never been faced with death before. And it was really traumatic, and I just, you know, I'd sit there and talk to her and hold her hand, and she was so broken up about losing her folks, and I had no answers, and all I could think of was, I don't want to do that for the rest of my life. I do not want to be in an emergency room when somebody like this comes in, or have to come in and deal with somebody all the time. And so my cousin was head nurse in some nursing program up around Kansas City, and mother even had me enrolled. And I didn't want to go. And so she said, well, what do you do? And I said, well, I don't know. I love kids. I want to work with kids. What, healthy kids. And so, well, Emporia's the place you'll go then. So they packed me up and cried my heart out. Told my horse goodbye, and I thought I was going to die. And I missed him more than I did anybody. But off I went to Emporia, and none of my classmates went up there. So I was just dropped off in a new world, kind of like Bobby was with high school. Mm-hmm. And it was a terrible adjustment. Girls didn't have cars. So the only way to come home was to find somebody that did have a car that would bring you home, or you had to ride the bus or the train. And to ride the bus, which would get me home by supper time, I had to cut classes. It took me a semester to figure out that that was not a wise thing to do, was to cut classes, to go home. So I usually rode the train home. But and he'd come sometimes, and if I rode the fast train, it wouldn't stop in a small town. So he'd come to Dodge and pick me up and bring me home.
But there were slow trains that were still stopping in Kinsale.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that was enough for him.
Yeah. I would have had to change a couple times probably, and this one came straight through. And
last year we had a deal worked out. When she was home, I'd leave my car for her.
Your car at the depot.
Leave the car at the depot. And then we'd run across and go to the picture show and Dodge. Then I'd catch the milk train and go back. Yeah. Come back home.
We had to be careful and not miss that train before to come home, because I had to be in school.
Who was the guy? What do you call him?
Conductor.
Conductor?
Or the brakeman.
I don't know. One night the picture show was just about a hair too long, and
Hurry up!
I can't
hold him any longer.
Now they probably run over here.
that was really kind of cool because they looked for him, you know.
Mm-hmm. What did it cost you to ride home on the train?
I forget.
Probably $1 or $2.
No, well, from Emporia.
Oh, you know, I don't remember. I'm sure it was under $10.
And so then you majored in education.
Yes.
And became an elementary teacher.
Mm-hmm. And then I got a job in Dodge City at Miller School, which is on the east side. And that was my first experience with multiracial kids. I really enjoyed it. Most of the kids there were very, very cool. And they just thought, I mean, they were just so happy to be at school. And it was, you know, they weren't hard to discipline at all. I had first grade. And we had, you know, everybody thinks of John Kennedy as the Peace Corps person. Well, we had a very progressive woman principal. And she found out that I could do tumbling. And one of the, I think Lon was a fifth or sixth grade teacher. And the music teacher was too old to get on the mats and do anything, but she was familiar with it. And so we started a program, tumbling program before school. And that was to go along with John Kennedy's fitness for youth. And I would go, the teachers couldn't wear slacks to school, and I would go to school dressed, or with my jeans and sweatshirt on, and my good clothes on a hanger. And when tumbling was over, one of the kids' mother would go into the classroom and take roll and Pledge of Allegiance, and by that time I'd have my school clothes on. And so then I teach, and I do have some pictures from the newspaper over there of that. Mm-hmm. And we, after the newspaper had done this story on us, they sent it to John Kennedy, President Kennedy, and he sent a letter back to the school, and I would have given anything to have had that letter. And I did ask my principal years later if she still had Kennedy's letter. Well, she was sure she did, but she had no idea she was retired, where it'd be, or if it was left at Miller or what. So I didn't get that. But it was really neat. It kept he got the kids to school and they were happy, it was a good program.
Okay, now, I said we didn't cover this in Bobby's interview, but you're 3.5 years
yeah.
younger and Protestant, and there's some objections by your father with this liaison that you're having with this Catholic boy, Catholic yes. country boy with yes. a motorcycle.
Yes. My dad was a good Mason.
That was a good Mason?
Mm-hmm. And he had come from a family that the German Catholics were second-class citizens. And he tried not to be so prejudiced but he was. And he really hoped that, you know, after he went overseas, that when he came back, I'd be involved with somebody in college.
Mm-hmm.
Mother was hoping for a lawyer or a doctor or something, and I disappointed her greatly. But we went to a lot of wedding dances, and in high school, there was the roller skating rink. When I was grade school, I think it was just in grade school, we needed a skating rink, and so it was the younger guys that had come back from World War II, they decided to make us a skating rink down in what we call the Pink Building, that's no longer the Pink Building. And they got some kind of synthetic flooring and put that down. And I skated on in there lots and lots. And then sometimes when the nice one was built by Feldman's, I skated some in high school.
So when did your dad come around? Or didn't he?
No, it was after we were married.
After you were married.
I heard him say to one of, before we were married, somebody, I had my ring, and one of the relatives said, well, Todd, what's wrong with you that you don't like him? And Daddy said, well, he's a hard worker, and he's never been in trouble. He says, he's okay, except he's a Catholic. And they said, well, I think maybe you ought to be glad she's found somebody that's a hard worker, never been in trouble. And he said, oh, I suppose. And then later on, one time I came to town with the kids, and I hadn't got all my running around and my groceries, and I hadn't got to go see everybody I wanted to see. So I stopped in at Mom's, and I said, how about supper? And she said, oh, that'd be fine. Would you like to have us for supper? So I called Bobby and told him to fix his own supper, and my dad just sat there. Of course, his generation, he didn't do that. And he looked at me and he says, well, that's really a poor way to show a hard-working guy how much you appreciate him. Go fix your own supper.
Then it hasn't stopped neither.
But, you know, he...
And you converted.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was kind of... There were a lot of people that I've been... Older people that I have known that, you know, were kind of shaking their heads.
But it worked out fine.
It did work out fine.
This is a two-fuckin'est town.
It was. It was.
Of any place in the... Any place you could have
A good what?
Ku Klux.
Ku Klux.
Oh, Ku Klux.
Black and Catholics had no use for it.
No, right?
I think that's why the Mexicans, they, you know, their little shanty was down there across the railroad track.
Their Mexican town.
They didn't
the women didn't come to town, I don't think at all.
We had one of them that went along picking up cigar butts this morning.
Yeah.
You knew her, didn't you?
Oh, don't tell that on there. Well, let's see, what else did I do in high school? And then college. And then more school. And Bobby came in when I had my ring, and he came in one evening after school, and I could tell he'd been to sale barn the way he was dressed, and you could smell the tobacco and all, you know. And he said, "I just bought a load of cattle." And I said, "You know, city girl." "Oh, you did?" "Yeah." He said, "You got the money to pay for them?" He says, "No. But Bill at the bank has a lot of faith in me, and he told me to just go buy whatever I wanted and then come in the next day and we'd work it out." And I said, "Well, how much did you spend?" And he said something like, $2,000? Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think it's about $5,000.
Anyway, I went, "That's more than I make all year." And anyway, we lost our tail on that too.
Lost our butt.
He learned afterwards that when the banker's that friendly, sometimes you back off.
Well, you were raised in the city, and then you moved to the country as a married lady. Was that quite an adjustment?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. I was so lonesome, I thought I'd die. It was just, you know, I was used to having kids and people around me, and I really didn't know anybody out there to go visit. And so I talked on the phone a lot. Now that brings me to the country phone lines. We had six people on our party line.
I don't.
And some of the older ones, they just liked to listen. And you knew they were on there just listening. And then there was one guy that was just really awful. And he'd pick it up, and I'd be talking, and he'd say, "Get them off the top of them!" And then he'd bang it down. And then he'd come up back, and he'd go, "Bang, bang, 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 bang." And then he'd cuss a little bit. Well, you know, that makes you not want to hang up. Later on, when they put the underground cable out there, then we ended up with just Doc and Doris and Norman Hermans and us. And that was a lot better. But, I mean, there were no secrets out there because everybody listened on the telephone.
Back up a little bit. Did you get married at St. Nicholas?
Bobby had lived in town with his folks when he came home from the Army, and then so we got married at St. Nicholas.
A big wedding with bridesmaids and things?
Well, yeah, it was average, you know.
Church was full.
Yeah, church
was full. And your daddy paid for the wedding?
Yeah, did you? He paid for a lot, and I paid for a lot, and my folks paid for some. My uncle was in the printing business, and so he did all the invitations as a gift. And, you know, they didn't go to the all the decorations and so on like they did.
Did you have a wedding dinner and dance then? You were, of course, like doing that.
We had the dinner. Where? We got married in the morning, and we had the dinner at St. Nicholas. And then the reception was in the evening, and then the dance followed, and that was out at St. Peter and Paul.
I bought 2 kegs of beer and never got a drink of it.
It was all gone by the time we got out of the reception. He was really steamed about that.
And you were having this dance under the stars?
Yeah, on the platform.
So you had nice weather?
Yeah, it's real nice weather. And then it...
It rained like hell on us about midnight.
It was just starting to sprinkle when we left.
And you were at a honeymoon.
Well, we went to Dodge and then we came back the next day. He had some, because it had rained, he had some field work that needed to be done. So we waited, oh, about a week, I think it was. And then we left, we went to the World's Fair in
Seattle.
Well, that would be quite a trip.
Yeah, it was quite a trip.
You drove?
Yeah.
And we're gone how long?
About 10 days, 2 weeks. Yeah.
And what impressed you about the World's Fair in Seattle?
Nothing.
Well, those hills in
Our cars is running just like they said they would. I couldn't understand what was going on. It was all electronic. It was all, you know, what future. Mm-hmm. And we got it.
Yeah, but it was...
I still don't know nothing.
They had a home that was built in this big building, and it was all glassed in. And it had the future... It was futuristic, and they had robots doing things. And... microwaves and things that to us was just so far, and you know, like, oh, good grief, that and there. Yeah. The best part was we kept hearing about, we took the ferry over to
Vancouver?
Vancouver, Victoria. And we kept hearing about that. So we had a little shopping bag thing that I'd been carrying to put the souvenirs in. We threw a few necessities into that, and we drove way up the coast to get to this ferry, and we went over to Victoria and spent a couple days there. And that was, I thought that was the most beautiful city I'd seen, because of all the hanging flowers. And
is that where we went to restaurant and was out over the water, you know, to eat?
No, that was in Seattle.
That's what I was saying, yeah. In Seattle, I think, anyway. We didn't have enough money. I said to her, I said, I just, what the heck are we going to do? But we had driver's checks, it was, you know, God. So I had to leave her for collateral. Well, I went out and got the traveler's checks.
And then they came for the traveler's check with a silver tray, you know. And we kind of got in over our heads on that.
Was the Space Needle a part of the fair? That's when it was built?
Yeah, we went up, but we couldn't afford to eat up there. It was real expensive. Mm-hmm. And they had... the monorail was built for that. We rode the monorail downtown. And I thought that was kind of an exciting thing, because it went so fast and, you know, everything was just blurred, just zoom.
Did you sightsee on your way there and back at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we saw Yellowstone and... What all did
Grand Tetons, and you probably...
We didn't go into
we
the Tetons.
We had enough mountains.
Yeah, we were ready to come home. But Yellowstone was... It was really interesting.
We've been in three of them Space Needles, the one at Las Vegas
and
San Antonio.
San Antonio.
Well, that was an exciting honeymoon.
Yeah.
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we did those two needles we saw later. Oh, God.
Okay, then you started having children.
Yeah. Baptized Curtis on our first anniversary. And he was a terrible baby. Cried. But anyway, he's big and healthy now, sort of. And
yeah. Did you read that in Hutchison's paper about colic? I was going to read it. And,
I missed that.
Never got around to it. Man, I had a little boy there, just his mouth was open that wide, bawling.
They came and asked me from up at St. Mary's. They had a one-room schoolhouse up there. And they wanted me to go teach up there. It was just after Curtis was born. And I said something to old Dr. Snowball about it. And he looked at me and he says, "Now let me tell you something. Now this is the way it really is, or should be. What a child learns in the first 5 years is the most important they'll ever have. Now, you need to stay home with him for 5 years, and then you go do what you want to. But you need to stay home with that baby for 5 years."
Boy, they don't know more.
No, they almost go as soon as they... out. We stayed in the hospital 5 days when I had Leanne. That was the third one. And he said, "Are you going to have any help?" And I said, "Oh, well, Bob's mother's going to come out once in a while." And he says, "That's not good enough. You'll stay till I'm ready to let you go." And I had to stay for 7 days. He said, "You'll just go home and just work yourself today." Running after those kids.
Because you had the other two kids. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know whether he thought I was milking all cows or I was going to drive a tractor. Or, but I didn't drive a tractor and I didn't milk cows. That was one thing my mother told me before I got married. She said, "If you don't learn to milk a cow, you'll never have to. If you learn to milk a cow, you're going to be stuck out there evening after evening for one reason or another. Just don't learn to milk."
Did you garden and can and that sort of thing?
I tried to garden, but I just didn't. There was too much wind.
Mm-hmm.
And, I did can some tomatoes and peaches and, make jelly and stuff like that.
And when did you go back to teaching then?
Okay.
How
Curtis
old
was just a year and a half. And a teacher over at Lincoln had broken her contract, and her husband had moved to California, so she was going to. And that was for third grade. And we just bought a half section down by Nettleton. And so I said to Bobby, "What do you think about me seeing if I can get that job?" "Oh," he said, "I don't think they'll hire you, probably, but go ahead. Sure be handy." So I called Rosetta's father-in-law in the evening and I said, "When are they going to hire this teacher for the third grade?" And he said, "Tomorrow night." "Oh." He said, "Are you interested?" Now, he had been my principal and grade school teacher. And I said, "Well, yeah, I'm interested." I said, "Oh my gosh, you're almost too late. We've got some really good people applying, but they're all out-of-towners. You get in there first thing in the morning. I'll tell, is it 4 Acre or, I don't know, that you'll be coming." And I went in and we talked a little bit. He says, "Okay, I'll present you your name at the board." And, of course, I knew most everybody on the board and I got me a job, so I started teaching the third grade.
And Curtis was just a year and a half.
Yeah.
So you didn't wait the 5 years.
No. not that time. Anyway, I got pregnant with Lisa, just bang, just right off. So, of course,
the labor must have been there.
Oh, yeah, sure. And so I just finished that year and went back home. And I didn't go back to teaching until Leanne was in kindergarten. And again, I did a lot of substituting. Most of that was at Overly. And a teacher called in sick after like the second week of school, and it was the sixth grade. And I was not an upper grade teacher. I knew that. But anyway, Mr. Graff called me. And I went in, and I thought it'd be a week, maybe at the most. She had no lesson plan. She had nothing laid out. And then he came to me and he said, on Friday, and he says, "Well, I guess you better come back next week. I guess she's not any better." And it got almost time for report cards. It was 6 weeks at that time. And I said to him, "Mr. Graff, what am I going to do for report cards and conferences?" And he says, "I've been calling and asking, And her husband just keeps saying, well, it's mono. It's, you know. So finally he went down and got in his face and said, what's going on? She'd had a nervous breakdown and she was ignoring it. So she resigned and I finished out that sixth grade year. There were two sixth grades. Curtis was in the other sixth grade. And towards the end of the year, he said, you know, the fourth grade teacher is going to retire. So he says, why don't you just take that? And I said, well, I don't know anything about fourth grade. And he said, oh, I think you'd like it. I really think you'd like it. So he convinced me, and I went to fourth grade, and that's where I stayed for the next almost 30 years.
And what school are you teaching at this point?
Both those were over at the Lincoln Building. Mm-hmm. And then after I was at Southside for a few years with fourth grade, and then because of the enrollment, then they moved me over to back over to Lincoln, and then I was back to Southside, and then they moved me to Offerley, and I was at Offerley for 8 years, and then I came back to Southside.
Okay.
So
you were teaching because to help out with the farm expenses?
Mostly because I wanted to.
Mostly because you wanted to. Okay. And during this period, we have the consolidation of schools.
No, it had already taken place.
What's the year on it?
68, 69. Post consolidation.
Okay, but I wasn't. Gosh, I guess maybe. Yeah, I was too at Southside when they started sending some Offerley kids over. Mm-hmm. Because there were some of them that were really upset, you know, little kids.
Mm-hmm.
And but I, and then I, after I retired, I went up to the high school and did in-school suspension work with some of the kids. But
you don't remember that consolidation period and the politics of that, or?
No, I really don't. I remember a couple of kids were so scared when they came over, little grade school kids, when they came over, and that they cried and so on. But there were hard feelings. You know, that's why.
No, wait, when they consolidated, you still had. Why were kids coming over here?
Okay, when they consolidated, they took the junior high and moved it over into the south end of the Offerley building.
Okay.
And so, let's see. And I think they still had the lower grades. They were double rooms. There were three rooms, and there was, you know, first and second, and third and fourth and fifth and sixth together.
No, I'm just trying to figure out why we're over the kids coming here.
And then, I don't remember, do you know how that?
They kept their grade school at Offerley.
I served in that grade school a lot.
I don't know
before why. Before I went back to teaching. And then when they decided, I guess maybe they just turned the whole building into junior high.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some parents decided to go towards the Kinsley rather than.
And Galen was over there. There was
okay. They sent the little kids over, and the fifth and sixth grade then went over.
Oh, it went.
And they were in the north end, and the junior high was in the other end. Because
so it became sort of a middle school, junior high school.
It was middle
at one
school.
Point.
No, then it became a middle school.
Yeah, because when I was moved from
Kinsley,
the fourth grade.
There?
Galen was over there when I got over there.
Mm-hmm.
They moved the fourth grade over there. And then it was fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh and eighth. And they had little kids with their
Billy Turk black yet from drinking so much coffee?
No, doesn't seem to be back together. And then you said that Curtis went to Southside, right?
No.
Curtis started. Curtis started at the parochial school, and we took him out in fourth grade and put him at Lincoln.
At Lincoln. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said that Curtis was in the same class, one school in class of sixth graders, and you were in the other class of sixth graders.
Yeah.
And you were in Southside.
No, I started it at Lincoln.
Okay. That's my confusion. Okay. All right. I wondered what Curtis was doing at Southside if he was a country boy.
No.
Okay. I got mixed up, sorry.
That's okay. Kind of confusing. But I, of all Mr. Graff's students that he had go through his grade school, I was the only one that came back and taught for him.
Oh, okay.
And when I retired, I told, Tara was in first grade, and I told Leanne, I said, okay, when I'm all checked out and ready to go, I said, I'm going to do something that was important to me when I was a little kid at Southside. At Southside, if you were good, when you had to stand in the entryway, and it was pretty little, you just packed in there before the bell rang. If you were good, the janitor, when he came to ring the bell, would choose you to help him ring the bell, and you'd ride the rope, you know. And I always thought that was the most exciting thing. So I told her, I said, you bring Tara over, because I'm going to go out the same door. I'm going to finish my education going out the same door I came in to go to kindergarten. And my granddaughter's going to ring the bell for me, or with me. And so Judy Shepherd and a few of them in the building knew that I was going to do that. And so Tara and I pulled the bell and rang it, and everybody came down and told me goodbye. And we took pictures, but they didn't come out.
There's probably other things we're missing with you, but
probably we should wind it up.
Yeah, we've got this.
We have another appointment.
You may have to feed her.
Last week I didn't give her food.
We've got some, let's see.
We've got pictures to take.
Pictures to take and everything else.
It is new.
Yep, it is new.